1% in the polls, and his campaign has been so strapped for cash.
Welcome to Shooting the Breeze with Christy Camuzzi. Texas, it's a big state with a whole lot of wind blowing around. What can we do with all that wind? With a genuine breath of fresh air, here's Christy.
Hello, Dallas, and welcome to Shooting the Breeze on Talk Radio 1190 AM. I'm your host, Christy Camuzzi, and on each show, I'll be talking with a special guest, pulling energy out of thin air, discussing what it means to be part of the regeneration generation, bringing renewable power to the people. On today's show, we're going to be exploring the theme of America the Renewable. You know, America has always been a nation of renewal, and Americans have always had the possibilities of remaking themselves, of having second acts, of having new possibilities that come with starting life anew. On today's show, we're going to dig deep and explore a renewable that, you know, a lot of folks don't know much about, including me. Co-founder of Breeze Energy, John Spicer, is here with me today to welcome two very special guests, Maria Richards of SMU and Jeff Dye of Earth Day, Texas. Maria is the Southern Methodist University Geothermal Laboratory Coordinator in the Huffington Department of Earth Sciences, where she conducts research on geothermal resources and energy development. Maria and SMU's research is renowned as the baseline for U.S. geothermal energy exploration, and currently, she is investigating the conversion of oil and gas wells into geothermal energy sources. Maria has also been named President-elect of the Geothermal Resources Council and will become the 26th president and the first female president, way to go, Maria, of the Global Energy Organization beginning in 2017. We also have Jeff Dye with us, the operational manager for Earth Day Texas, an organization with the mission to provide a unique stage where business, nonprofit, government and academia converge at Earth Day Texas weekend in the spring to celebrate and educate on green initiatives. It's a great panel of guests for us today, not only because Jeff and Maria have a lot of interesting and important information to share with us on this topic of renewable energy, but also because Jeff traces back his passion for renewable energy and conservation to when he worked with Maria Richards at the SMU Geothermal Lab during his undergrad years at SMU. So, without further ado, welcome Maria and Jeff. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Christy and John, for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks for having us here.
You're welcome. So listen, as I mentioned at the top of the show, geothermal, right off the bat, Maria, could you give us a bit of a primer on geothermal energy, a definition, if you will, for myself and the listeners? What is it? Where is it? Where do we find it? How does it work? Like, I'm trying to picture in my mind, is it below the earth, I'm assuming?
Sure, yes. So that's what's exciting about geothermal is that below everybody's feet, there's hot energy. It doesn't have to be super hot. In fact, there's energy below all of the homes that we have here in Dallas that could be using the heat below our feet in order to either heat or cool your home. In fact, many homes, about 10,000 homes in the Dallas area, are using the geothermal energy below them for heating and cooling their homes. But on a much broader scale, there's also the ability to generate electricity from that heat. So if we dig down deeper, we are able to then pull up temperatures that are 200 degrees Fahrenheit, which is right around boiling. And even at those temperatures, just barely boiling, which is 212, you can start generating electricity.
Okay, John, tell me a little bit, kind of paint the picture of geothermal, because in my brain, you know, we've had you on the show. I understand how a wind turbine captures wind. So what is Maria talking about?
Well, with respect to heating and cooling your house, the way I understand it is the ground temperature, once you get so many feet below the surface, is approximately the average temperature of an area. So in Dallas, it may be about 70 degrees, give or take a couple degrees year round. You know, it's a little warmer in the summer, a little cooler. So for a heat source, you would be pulling up, say, 70 degree water, I think is what they typically circulate to help your heater out in the middle of the winter when it's, you know, say 30 degrees. And the flip side is in the summertime, you have that, you know, around 70 degree water temperature to cool your air conditioner. And so instead of running that big fan that sits on the side of your house, those coils are sitting down in the earth and being cooled that way.
So it's like a machine, it's a pump.
So it's an exchange system. Yes. So what we are able to do is instead of an air conditioner outside, there is what John was saying, a pump on the inside of your home. It's kind of like how you have a heater today. Most people have heaters, even in Dallas, in our homes. So we have
For those rare few months that we
right.
we need
exactly.
It, right?
Well, I'm from Michigan, so we used to use heat a lot. You have a unit inside your home that is able to circulate the fluids through your home and exchanges from the air temperature in your home, which will have heat or cold air in it, with the fluids that then go into the ground. And the ground is where you literally have like a giant storage tank, not a physical tank, but an earth tank that is exchanging the heat or cold water that's coming from your home into the ground, pulling back out whatever temperature you need.
And then when you talk about the larger scale, where you're talking about 200 or degrees or higher, the basic cycle of way a thermal electric generating plant works, it's the expansion and condensing of steam. And so if you burn something, you're heating the water up, it creates steam, and you run it through a cycle. Or in this case, you're using the earth as a heat source. And that's how you create the steam. The simplest way to perhaps think of how that's happening is Old Faithful, the geyser, you know, it's hot enough underground and there's some water present that percolates into that area and it blows out steam. And so instead of just blowing it out, you could conceivably capture it. When you do it at low temperatures, you have to take other things into consideration,
Right. But the idea of wind turbines and the geothermal turbines are something that are really, it's really the same type of concept. We are trying to turn something that will then generate the electricity. So with wind, you're going to turn the turbine with the wind. With geothermal, we're using the hot fluids coming out of the ground.
Yeah, in engineering terms, they call them working fluids, but it's basically, you know, in the case of wind, it's air blowing across blades that cause it to turn. In the case of a steam turbine, it's steam blowing across blades that's causing it to turn, and in both cases, it's turning an electric generator.
Okay, now I've got a picture. Now I'm getting it. So we got to have steam to turn. So what's creating the steam? Is it the high heat? Is it?
Yeah, so it's the high heat. And with John mentioned the word working fluid, And I was talking about things that were less than boiling. So 200 degrees is less than boiling. So how can you get something less than boiling to go to a steam?
That's what I wanted to know.
How can that happen? So it's not magic. It's engineering.
And woohoo for engineers.
Yeah. That's your plug. What happens is there is a fluid that will boil at a lower degrees, you know, at something less than 212. So water is 212. That's why we think of boiling as is 212 because that's water. But other things will be boiling at a different lower temperature. And so that's the working fluid. So you use that fluid within what's called a closed loop within your turbine system, your power plant. And then from there, you use the fluid coming out of the ground, which is going to be hot enough to then boil that secondary working fluid.
Okay. Wow. So how did you even become interested in this field of study? I'm listening to this and it's fascinating. When did you get the spark for geothermal along the line? Were you a kid? Were you a little bit older?
So I've always, my original degree is in geography.
Okay.
I'm a geographer. So I love making maps. I love traveling. I love exploring the world. And I found that geothermal, when I moved here to Dallas and was able to, my husband also works in the Huffington Department of Earth Sciences. And so he also was a geologist. And so from there, I was able to then meet with the faculty member, Dave Blackwell. And he is somebody who is really considered one of the original pioneers of the geothermal energy business. He's been in it for over 50 years. And so I was able to get a job with him because of my geography skills and have now worked there for 21 years.
Wow, that's fantastic. So
what was the process leading to your current position at the Geothermal Laboratory and president-elect of the Geothermal Resources Council?
So when I started at SMU, I started as a part-time person and have just continued to love more and more the geothermal energy industry and working with students like Jeff Dye and helping them and learning more about what they're doing and their interest really, I think, encouraged me to want to learn more about geothermal energy. And then with the Geothermal Resources Council, that was something where Dave had also been on the board of the Geothermal Resources Council, Dave Blackwell, the faculty member I worked with. And he is somebody who really encouraged me to develop who I am and really sent me out on the road to give talks and do things like this. And I think part of it is being the first female. It's about confidence as well.
Absolutely. Hear, hear.
Can you expand on some of your previous research? What were some of the major projects and findings?
Yes. So some of the research that I think has been, I think, most interesting and really usable for all people who are into computers is the Google project. And that had stemmed from the fact that we at SMU were coordinating the geothermal map of North America. So there's an American Association of Petroleum Geologists map that's produced that shows you across the whole North American continent where the heat flow is, which is the amount of heat flowing from the earth out through the surface.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of a cool thought to think we understand, and we do. We can map out how much heat is coming out of the ground in different places, and it changes in different as you go across the country. But then Google came to us because they were looking to better understand how they could reduce their impact on energy. As with all those servers that they have, there's
Absolutely.
Lots of heat, and
yeah.
So they're really interested in renewables. And geothermal, because of it being considered a base load technology, which means it's always on, that they were interested in our geothermal understanding and helping us to improve that. And then because of that, we got a lot more students involved with projects. You know, Jeff was working, you know, along with many other students on that project. But that's something that's online.
Yeah, you know, Jeff, having worked directly with Maria as an SMU undergrad, what exactly was it that appealed to you, sparked your interest? And tell us a little bit about some of the projects you worked with Maria on.
Sure. Well, getting into the geothermal lab wasn't really something that I planned before I went to SMU. I was actually going on a path to be, I was looking at international commercial real estate, and that's where I wanted to go. After a microeconomics class, I said, well, maybe this perhaps isn't quite the path that I want to take. And so I went down the environmental studies sustainability path. From there, I was in a geology class, a lab one day, and I remember my father telling me, "Hey, well, you know what? You're gonna need to get a job soon here. I don't want to continue to pay for everything in terms of your fun, your social life." I said, "All right." So
We've all been there, Jeff.
So I asked her in my lab. I said, "Hey, is there a place I can get a job here in this building?" And they said, "Well, you should go talk to Maria Richards in the SMU Geothermal Lab." And so I said, "Okay." I didn't really know what geothermal was, and so. Went up, met Maria. She's been a wonderful mentor to me ever since that. But I mean, just from the start there, as you mentioned, we were working on the mapping project. But another project that was really interesting to me was we were reaching out to oil and gas families and people who had ownership of these wells, and maybe they were at a point where they were going to cap wells, things like that. But
hold that thought right there, Jeff, because we're going to take a real short break here. But once we're back, we're going to continue talking with Jeff about this, about renewables, geothermal opportunities, what it means for Texas, our country, our economy, and you. You're listening to Shooting the Breeze on Talk Radio, 1190 AM.
winning. It's what we do.
Get hit as he throws. It's deep ball to Jakeem Grant. It's a touchdown, Red Raiders.
Hit or be hit.
Oh, what a hit by Micah Alway. Oh, man.
Hear all of the hard-hitting action every weekend right here on the Red Raiders Sports Network.
The Red Raiders face the UTEP Miners at Jones AT&T Stadium in Lubbock Saturday, September 12th. Kickoff is at 2. The pregame show starts at 1 here on Talk Radio 1190.
Wake up to something new. Wake up to Harry's. Say goodbye to your overpriced, uninspired old razor set and say hello to an amazing shave with Harry's. Harry's keeps prices low by owning the factory where they produce high-quality razors and selling them online at harrys.com. Plus, shipping is free and quality guaranteed, saving you time and money. A Harry's shave set includes everything you need to get started. A razor, 3 high-quality blades, and shaving cream for just $10 with coupon code 1212 at harrys.com. Go to harrys.com right now and enter promo code 8383 at checkout to get $5 off your first purchase. That's harrys.com, code 8383.
This is an announcement for all people who want to take a risk-free challenge to whiten their teeth in 5 minutes using clinically proven power swabs. This risk-free challenge is for people whose smile has been yellowed by coffee, tea, or smoking. It's so effective, we challenge you to try it for 5 minutes to see how white your smile could be. If lines are busy, try again. Dial 1-800-663-5922. That's 1-800-663-5922. 1-800-663-5922.
Certified pre-owned Acuras. Everything you'd expect from a luxury car for less. Available now with limited time aggressive financing at your DFW Acura dealer's certified pre-owned sales event. Find your nearest Acura dealer online at dfwacuradealers.com.
You're listening to Shooting the Breeze, right here on Talk Radio 1190.
Welcome back to the show. We're sitting here with our geothermal energy expert, Maria Richards, our resident wind energy expert, John Spicer, and Jeff Dye of Earth Day Texas, shooting the breeze on renewable energy forms and what opportunities that provides for Americans. Before we took the break, Jeff, you were digging into how you started to dig into geothermal.
That's right. Yeah. So up in the lab, they were working on a variety of projects up there, and SMU Geothermal has done a fantastic job just nationally with their recognition, too. But the project that I was talking about, we were reaching out to oil and gas owners or just families, people that had wells. And some of these wells get to a stage where they can no longer produce the same amounts, so perhaps capping the well or other methods of just stopping the flow, people try to think about. But actually, when I was reaching out to these people, I was bringing geothermal with me, saying, okay, instead of just capping these wells, let's investigate a little bit more about geothermal. You can still make some royalty pay or kickback on that. And so through reaching out to these people, it was just a really interesting it was an interesting procedure just to see how I could use these existing operations that they had out in these oil and gas fields. I could put geothermal over this, basically almost like a plug and play, and I could generate electricity that was emission free.
You know, that's what I find fascinating about what you guys are doing with this. You know, Maria, the maps you co-directed have actually become the baseline for U.S. geothermal energy exploration. So obviously, there's a lot to them. What exactly are these maps showing us about North American geothermal energy, and what's the significance?
That's a great question, because we call them the geothermal maps of North America, or the geothermal map of the United States that Google has online. But you know, we talked about how geothermal really is an energy production, John. You know, we were talking about the turbines and the fluid flow and things like that. The maps, though, are the amount of heat. And so it's heat flow, which is milliwatts per meter squared. And so for those of you who are, you know, into energy and things like that and units. So it's literally, though, the idea of taking, so if you think about a milliwatt, like on your home energy bill, you would have
kilowatt.
Yeah, so kilowatt is your, you know, kilowatt hours and things like that. So this is milli, so it's even smaller. And then it's a meter squared. And so it's literally how much energy is really flowing up through that meter square of Earth. And so we're able to map it. It's kind of broad-based as well. One of the things that I got to do this summer and that we've done for years, and how we get this to how we get these kind of numbers is that we go out and we measure the temperature in somebody's well. So by sticking a probe down through a borehole, either, and it can be an oil and gas well, so any, you know, a city well or oil and gas or a farm well, something like that. So I got to go up to Montana this summer and map people's wells and look at the water temperature. And as you go down through the earth, you start seeing a gradient. How is that temperature changing as you go deeper? And so from there, you can then take that information and extrapolate as to how much heat is literally flowing through the earth at that location.
So it's the same as, I mean, I can't think of a source, but I've seen things where they talk about how hot it is inside of mines and, you know, how the workers are exposed to, you know,
yes.
You wouldn't think it's so hot because you're underground, but in reality, it is hot and dark, et cetera. I guess when you see those mine collapses that show up in the news, they kind of talk about
right.
that a
John,
little bit.
That's a great example. I'm really impressed. So
he's an engineer, too.
Well, there you go. But no, it does. It gets, you know, even at a near surface, it can get, you know, hotter, as you're saying, with mines. And so you can, so you were mentioning, John, that's about 70 degrees here in Dallas, right below our homes. And, you know, that's like the first, you know, about 100, you know, feet below. But as you keep going deeper and deeper, you're going to be getting hotter.
So where are some hot spots? Like, what? In, as you look at the globe, where are the hot spots?
Well, the hottest one is what John mentioned earlier, the Yellowstone. So Yellowstone is one of the hottest places.
Old Faithful.
Old Faithful is an example. Yeah, so the fact that there's geysers are one of the hottest places. In Western United States, in California, actually this summer there was a fire in the Clear Lake area.
Yeah.
And that Clear Lake area is in one of the hottest places in the United States. And that's where there's only, so you know, in it's called the geysers. So there's some place called the geysers. And then there's one other place in the world in Lautarello, Italy, so southern Italy, that has the same formation. And what happens is that geologically it's so hot, but it is steam inside because of the geologic formation forces the water to be in steam. And so it's basically in a until you – the steam is inside something that it can't escape, basically, is what's happening. But so those are really unique examples.
Okay. You know, when we began this series on Shooting the Breeze, John was my very first guest talking about the renewable resource wind. And at that time, we learned that Texas is abundantly rich with the natural renewable resource of wind. In terms of your work, Maria, can you talk about what is it about Texas in particular that provides geothermal resources? Is Texas a good place?
Yeah, so Texas has an amazing amount of energy below because of the sedimentary basin. What all those sediments do in the Gulf Coast, you know, we think of sediments as being oil and gas reservoirs, and they are. But those sediments have also allowed the heat not to escape. And so places...
Is it like a protective shield?
Yeah, actually like it's like a blanket. Think about, you know, when it's cold, you put more and more blankets on you to keep your heat in.
Yes.
Well, that all those sediments act like a blanket.
The layers.
The layers.
Okay.
Yep. And so because of that blanketing, that the original heat that is the natural heat coming out of the earth that we're mapping... is actually somewhat reduced, and so it doesn't escape as quickly. So things are not cooling off as fast. As you can think of it as that. So this heat is then being stored in the earth, and so when you drill down into like the Eagle Ford Shale, so in South Texas, our temperatures. So at, like at 8,000 feet, so a long way down, but 8,000 feet, you're over 250 to 300 degrees Fahrenheit.
When you say it's being stored in the earth, what is that form? So it's underneath all this sediment layer. Is it water, gas? What is?
So it's it could be either or.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, or just the idea is that the rocks are hot. If you think about your feet, you know, on the beach, you know,
yes.
right below that, it's like the surface is so hot, it's like ouch. So the rock material can also absorb that heat. But for geothermal to work, we need to extract that heat. And so that's where the next thing to do is to find places where there's the water or, I'll start with water. Water is the easiest way to extract that out, or the steam that we're talking about in the geysers.
Is there much in the way of implementation of using oil and gas fields or depleted oil and gas fields for this? I mean, I've heard, in the geysers and the Salton Sea and all the things that's kind of been going on for a number of years in California, but I was wondering if there was much in the way of implementing anything in depleted oil and gas fields.
Yes. So that's where my research has come in, and I'm interested in taking this amazing energy state's resources. You know, I want to keep Texas the energy state.
The leader.
I'm from Michigan, but I definitely have become a Texan. And so I would like to continue to have the focus of Texas oil and gas be on that industry. But what's neat is what Jeff was talking about is that how as a well, towards the end of its lifetime, they either just shut it in hoping for better pricing or they will convert it or they just plain abandon it. And so rather than abandon an oil and gas well, it's an opportunity for us to go back in and use that well and that all the surface equipment and things like that to then extract out more oil and gas and water.
I love that concept because the topic of the show today, and actually a series that we're starting with you, is America the Renewable. And this discussion on both the state of renewable energy forms in our country and how Americans have always found ways of repurposing, recycling, renewing, and this concept that we could take these old oil and gas wells is right on point to what you were saying, Jeff, when mm-hmm. you went out in the field and met with some of these folks. It's such a great green thing, initiative. And I don't think this idea of renewal is too far off your organization's goals at Earth Day Texas, right, Jeff?
Correct. At Earth Day Texas, what we want to be, what we try to do is just to be this, as you mentioned earlier, this stage, this platform. Where over the weekend we can invite all these people to network, business to business, business to consumer. We've got a lot of people that come out for this event. It's what we're doing is promoting responsible stewardship of this planet. We're promoting sustainable business growth. It's just we're promoting environmental education. It's just the place to be. April 22nd through 24th in 2016.
Is it just one day a year? We had your colleague on. Ken Klavanis, who's, I guess, the executive director of your organization, and we had the theme of Earth Day is every day. So is it just one weekend in the spring, or what are y'all doing that's different this year?
Actually, yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. This year, we're very excited. We've got some great new partnerships, including SMU with a little bit. Not so much the geothermal lab with Maria, but just with SMU, we're working with a TEDx series where we're going to be screening a monthly film with them. We're also going to be doing something called EDMO, Earth Day Monthly, basically, where we invite some panelists in, and it's held at kind of a nice little place like a sustainable brewery, something like that, where it's just a little networking session. But we're learning about clean energy, or we're learning about local food or sustainable food production, just various topics like that. So we've got a lot more year-round activities that we want to engage with people leading up to Earth Day Texas. So
that's fantastic. And we're gonna have to wrap it up here, and I have so many more pages of questions for you guys, so for sure we're gonna invite you guys back on the show because there's a lot more that I want to tap into. But one last question before we have to wrap up to all of you: what in your opinion does the future of renewable energy look like here in the U.S. What does it mean for you, for me, our listeners, and what can we consumers expect in terms of clean green choices and those choices being affordable? Maria?
Yeah, so I see it as being, I love the idea of distributed energy, that to me this is what renewables can help us with. And so by whether it's solar panels or geothermal or something that's wind close by that we can tap on our roofs, I think that'd be great.
I just like the idea of the efficiency of it all. It's like you're taking and it's a recycling as well as being renewable. So, for instance, taking an oil and gas well and repurposing it as a geothermal energy source.
That's it for our show today. Gosh, I hate cutting it off. I've got so much more to ask, but you've been listening to Shooting the Breeze on Talk Radio 1190 AM.